Previously on The Hollywood Outsider, we talked about sharks. Seriously, welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, as I just alluded to, our main topic revolves around the simple question, is television getting too serialized? We also have a new category for the Oscars, Blade Turns 20, reviews of The Meg and Crazy Rich Asians, and much more. Now, let's get on with the show. And if this was a serialized podcast, we would end on a cliffhanger, so stay tuned. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow hosts, Johnny Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. Amanda Sink is here.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Wait, how's, she's still here?
Yeah, she hasn't quit yet.
Yeah, I haven't gotten fired yet either.
Wow. I mean, we should get her a t-shirt or something.
I think she has one. Do you have a shirt that says I'm a hoe? Is that offensive? I don't know what the rules are.
I get a lot of weird looks for that when they can't see the back of the shirt, like if I'm wearing a sweater with it.
Where it says I'm a hoe and they're like, I wonder if she is. That's just rude.
Free publicity, man.
You should be getting a lot
man.
Of phone numbers and stuff, too.
I know, right?
I don't know. Do you want to give a phone number if it says I'm a hoe? I mean, wouldn't it be like, let me get an address where I can meet you for $20?
20?
I don't know how much you charge if you wear one.
A lot more than that.
That's good.
I'm worth more.
Confidence is important. Real quick, if you've ever listened to our spinoff podcast, Remake This Movie Right, the final episode of that series is now available. It is over. There is a Patreon goal. So if fans want a monthly episode, there's a chance we can do that if we hit that mark. Otherwise, that's it for Remake This Movie Right, so be sure to check it out.
I don't think you said final enough.
Final.
It'll make you cry. Maybe. Sorta. Kinda.
Did it make you cry?
I played the fifth.
Aw. John, did you cry?
Did you listen?
I didn't even listen. What show is that again?
Oh, wow. What a son of a bitch. All right. Did you guys see the What Men Want trailer where Taraji P. Henson can hear men's thoughts? Like that's something Hollywood thinks that we're super complicated and we need to make into a movie.
Look, I would totally take that in a second. To be able to read anybody's thoughts. I'm in on this movie.
Mm-hmm. You know, as a guy, I can actually see how when the first one came out, What Women Want, how women were like, this is the dumbest idea ever. Like guys really want to know what we think. And so now the shoes, you know, flipped or whatever that analogy is supposed to be that I can't seem to get right. Now we're sitting here like nobody really needs to know how often I'm thinking about doing A, B, or C.
Exactly. And I got to tell you from watching the trailer, that's not what guys are thinking. It's not. I mean, so many of the things were like, wow, that's what women think men are thinking. That's not what we're thinking.
Well, you know, that whole toast bit that's happened to me.
You have toast in your pocket?
Where I'm like, am I having a stroke? Wait, no, I have toast in my pocket.
That's actually probably a conversation you've sent to us in a private chat.
It probably yes. is. Why is toast in your pocket? I don't know, man. It's just there.
I had to save it delicious. For later. You know,
emergencies.
All right, let's jump into our movie and TV discussion. We got a lot to talk about before we get to our topic, which is, I think, going to be interesting. But the Oscars made some waves because they made some big changes. Not only are they now shying away from broadcasting every major category, they're only going to play the pretty people, apparently. They are instituting an outstanding achievement and popular film category, which caused a lot of people, except for Mark Wahlberg, to be pissed about it, which, of course, because he has no shot at an Oscar otherwise. So is this a great step for fans or just a cheap ploy for ratings, Amanda? You're a big Oscar fan.
I am a big Oscar fan. And while I can see their incentive to try to do something like this and showcase that the Oscars, the Academy in general, are trying to turn over a new leaf and that they're trying to do different things to appeal to their audiences.
They're losing them. They want people. They just want viewers. That's what it's about.
Yeah. And honestly, none of these changes make me excited. As somebody who's a big movie fan and as somebody who's a big Oscars fan, none of this is really jiving with me that much. Now, I understand the 3-hour, reduction in time, but haven't they been saying that we're going to have a 3-hour thing for many, many years. I feel like it does.
That is true.
It's an injustice every to the year. People who are going to be on there who have worked really hard to get up there. And if you're not the top tier, the one who's bringing in the most income, or you're getting that, you had the lead performance, so now you'll be listed as the lead performance and shown actually on TV and given that spotlight. I don't know. I just kind of feel like that's not really fair.
Yeah, and we should clarify for people that don't know what that means. If certain categories are going to basically get their awards during commercial breaks, and then they'll go back to the bigger awards when they come back from commercial breaks. So basically, Stanley, who won for, they haven't named the categories, but let's say best costume design or something, he's got to run his ass up there and give his speech, which I think generally those are the speeches that are the most heartfelt because they're the less rehearsed, least rehearsed. They got to run up there during a commercial break and then get off before, you know, they're done with a Colgate ad. That's just wrong in my mind.
They will release them later too. So they'll edit them and release YouTube. Them later. Yeah, but well, that's not really the same impact, is it?
Well, I mean, that's how a lot of people watch it now anyways. I mean, that's how I check it out. I'll wait till it shows up on YouTube and watch all the different speeches or how the awards went. And for me, it's fine because if I have to see that bastard that I went to school with get an award for third year, I'm going to just choke somebody is one, number one. But I, at the same time, I always feel like with this whole story,
I have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
I think
what,
that's like jealousy. Is that because usually jealousy. The word?
Oh, because you're an artist and they're artists and they're doing better than you. I got you.
No, I literally went to school with, Patrick, I forget his last name at the moment, but Pat, he works for Pixar and he won an award like two separate years for some shorts that he directed.
Aw, so you...
Go Patrick.
That's what you should be saying, that poor well, John.
I
mean,
I definitely say that, but at the same time, you know, it's hard to be reminded of my shortcomings. However, I still feel like the little girl from the Tostitos commercial where it's like, ¿por qué no los dos? You know, why not both? Why can't it both be the Academy trying to bring in more people while at the same time... trying to make everyone happy. But I think this is one of those things where everyone wants to feel included in the Oscars and they're like, all right, fine, we'll make you feel included and bring in something that you guys are all watching so that we can have an award for you. And now it's like, oh, well, this is just patronizing us. This is, you know, why can't they just let it be the stepping stone that gets everything else in?
I thought long and hard about this because people are... Some people are outraged because there is the People's Choice Awards, there's the Teen Awards, there's the Golden Globes, because of course they're supporting us, because I mean their awards are basically like, let's get drunk. That's literally what their awards program is. Let's all drink and see how drunk George Clooney can get. And I understand why they chose to do this, because ratings dropped like 12% or something from the previous year. And I'm sure a lot of that had to do with the choices that were there, because there weren't many popular films. It was a lot of art house hits. But I don't think – it feels like a participation ribbon to me. And it really feels like box office should be reward enough for those particular movies. I don't think the Oscars need to be the People's Choice Awards. I really feel like if you want to bring people back to the Oscars, keep the politics out of it and limit the amount of campaigning they do. They're basically campaigning for 4 or 5 months. That's all you see are award show circuits and them telling the same damn stories over and over again. And it's like a presidential campaign for an award. And it should not be like that. And that really turns people off because it's not special. The Oscars aren't unique anymore. I don't think a popular award is going to do that. I don't think it's going to bring anybody else in. You got to make the Oscars special again. And if you want to do that, find a way to eliminate all these junky awards that nobody cares about. That's
or how you and at keep least the add in the ones that are more impactful. We've talked before, and I don't know how long ago it was, but we've talked on this podcast about how there needs to be a category for basically for stunt performers.
Stunt choreography. They risk their lives for your selfish asses.
And they get nothing. And that's not a category that's being included
now. Call it the
Tom
Cruise Award if you want.
Go ahead. I would be behind that. But giving some more prestigious awards for people who deserve it, beyond the people who just bring in the big bucks, bringing in those sorts of things, giving more inclusivity versus exclusivity based on talent, I think would be more beneficial to the Academy than to just say, okay, well, we're just going to give everybody who does all right, yay, come here and have a party with us. That's not really what the Academy is about. And if you...
It's supposed to be about art. And I know that people are... Somebody's snickering right now. Art, it's... They're so full of themselves. They're self-important. And I don't disagree with you in some respects. But, I mean, as soon as you do something just to get popular favor, it is no longer about the art. It's just about ratings.
And
it's everything else in the world.
And how are they going to be categorizing that? That's my next question. Are you going to be doing it just off of box office dollars, or are you going to be doing it based off of what they brought in versus what they put out?
My guess would be something that's got to make over X amount of dollars. And then, you know, it's the best, I guess, critical. It seems like, hey, this is how we award movies like Black Panther and Infinity War and movies that are really did great business. But we don't really want to give them a real Oscar. I mean, come on. We can't give the Avengers movie an Oscar. Come on.
So why don't we just call it the Marvel Award? Because that's what we know is going to go in there.
Disney's the one that introduced it, so it probably...
Yeah, it's just going to be something for the biggest blockbuster, which we know happens to be Marvel movies right now. And eventually that might change, but for the near future, probably not. Thanks, Thanos.
You know, that statue, no matter what, still looks like that statue. And it looks great on mantles everywhere. So I don't... I mean, it's still an Oscar. It's fine. It'll be fine. I think this whole time calling the movies that they've selected more artful than movies that don't get selected is a little ridiculous, because there's been a lot of great movies that don't get selected or because they're too popular or whatever the reason is. And to at least be able to start opening the door to these quote unquote popular movies to get them some recognition that will eventually seep in and start getting in everything's veins. There's just as much art going on there, if not more, than in some of these movies that get selected. So I don't know. I'm playing the middle of the road saying, hey, let's just...
Sure you are. How about this as an option? I mean, because they don't have this figured out yet, which is great. You introduced this, but you don't have all the rules figured out. Nice job. You have 10 selections. Supposedly, the Dark Knight fiasco from a few years ago is what caused us to go from 5 nominees for Best Picture to 10. Because they felt like Dark Knight didn't get a nomination for Best Picture because... You know, for whatever reason. So they added more nominations because this way we'll get more in. And that hasn't worked out. More popular movies in, and it hasn't worked out. Why don't they, instead of creating a category for most popular achievement film, whatever, create something more along the lines of you still get 10 nominees, 3 of them or 4 or 5, whatever, are the top grossing films of the year domestically or worldwide, whichever way you go. And the other 5 are chosen by the bodies. By the different artistic bodies. You know what I mean? So then you get 5 based on what people loved and 5 based on what the artist loved. And then you pick the best picture from those. Wouldn't that make more sense? And then you still get both problems solved?
It wouldn't really solve the problem, though, because then they're never – more than likely, those ones that are chosen by the box office revenue aren't actually going to win the award. They're just going to be like, oh, here, you get a participation nomination.
Well, that's what the popular achievements the same.
But at least they have more ability to compete within their, I don't know, region per se, where they're competing against others that have the same likelihood of getting that award
blockbuster.
Right, versus movies that are seen as art movies in which the Academy is typically going to lean towards. And it's not – I'm with John. It's not to say that those movies aren't artistic in some respect, but there is – it's a weird way to explain it, but there's a specific way – a specific type of movie that the Academy looks for. And I'm sorry if the Avengers and Marvel movies don't really fit in that category necessarily. I would like to see them get more recognition for the work that they do. But overall, best movie – I mean – they're great movies and maybe a nominee, but I can't really say that compared to something like Moonlight. Moonlight.
No, Moonlight is a great show, and that's such a great movie.
But anyway, something compared to that,
Moonlight.
I just cannot see that comparison.
I thought it would have been really awesome if David Addison strolled through Moonlight while they're in that diner.
It's just hard because they're different types of works. And so I understand putting them in a different category, but why not do a whole subset of awards devoted to those popular films?
I would make the case, honestly, that there are many popular films that deserve to be nominated for Best Picture. And I think Infinity War is one, maybe Black Panther.
Nominated for sure.
Yeah. And if they're not getting nominated, I think there should be something done to change that. I just don't know if what they're doing is the right answer. I mean, it's great for ratings. I don't know if it's the right thing in terms of Oscars. It just feels like participation. I mean, we've kind of talked ad nauseum about this, but John, anything you want to add since we've already kind of
babbled?
Kumbaya, bitches.
Okay, Jesse.
That works. All right, well, we're going to move on to the weirdest. Wait, is there anything more about the Oscars? We do all agree that there needs to be a stunt choreography or something category, though.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, definitely. For sure. That's definitely a category we need to have filled in for sure.
Can we just, one more time, they risk their freaking lives for y'all, and you don't have a category for them. That's a bitch move, man.
Sure is.
Yeah. All right. Well, winning the weirdest story ever is that a cemetery in Chicago had a movie night.
What?
That's right. So A, John, is this ever a good idea? And B, let's say your family had a movie night for you in your cemetery of choice. What do you want them to actually play? Those are the two questions. You go ahead. Where do you want to go? Let's start with A. Is this ever a good idea to have a movie night in a cemetery? Because people were pissed.
So to be clear, you want me to start with A?
Yeah, start with A. Yeah, we'll come back to B.
We'll circle back around to B. All right, so A, yes, I think it's actually a great idea. And the reason why I think it's a great idea is because, with a certain amount of respect, I think it's a great idea. Let me just clarify. If you are, so long as the grounds aren't being torn up, the graves aren't being desecrated, any of these things, as long as there's some respect happening there, yes, a very good idea. Because otherwise, you have these plots of land that people rarely visit. I think, doesn't Chicago have some of the oldest cemeteries in the country? And if you aren't visiting them, then what's the point of that land being there?
They've got a lot of people there, though.
Because then we can think about them in that plot for eons. Remember?
Right.
Great-great-grandpa? You don't remember him. Nobody ever talked about him.
Nobody ever talked about him. But if you start developing a culture, like take New Orleans, for example. They honor their dead.
They're all buried on the upside.
They're not even buried. Everybody's above ground. And if you go, like, the graveyards are practically treated as parks. You can go there. Anyone can go there, have a picnic, do whatever you want to do. I've known people who go and they take their quadcopters there and do some cool stuff. And it's perfectly allowed because that's just how the mentality in New Orleans is. They honor their dead by burying them above ground. And I think having that sort of mentality so that people can go experience other lives that may or may not have had an influence on them, or they can spark some sort of interest just by being in that area. You know, you walk around. Oh, look, there's George Smith the Eighth. Who the hell was that? Why does he have a picture of an anvil on his? Did he get eaten by an anvil? Who knows? But it's a good reason to cause people to research, to investigate, to get them involved in the history of their area. So I think, yeah, it's a good idea. And as far as what would be playing,
hang on, that's a stretch, my friend. To get people involved in the history of their area, they're just going to watch a freaking movie. They're not doing a history lesson while they're there.
Well, I would actually disagree with you on that point, because people go to parks all the time and they learn history because of the park benches or statues that have some information on them and stuff
dark,
like that.
And they're watching a movie. Lawyered. They're not wandering around the cemetery, are they?
But are they not going to get there early before sundown like you would for a drive-in movie? Probably. You want to get the best seat in the graveyard.
It's not like it's not going to be a lit graveyard. I mean, you don't invite a whole bunch of people into a dark graveyard. That's just
where
bad
you get
form.
Stabbed.
I disagree. I think that would be kind of fun. But just don't step on, they're buried. What's it going to do? Don't step on the headstones. We're fine with that. Or use those as the seats, right? That's like free seating.
Yeah. I mean, like my mother's grave is a seat. I can go over there and sit there whenever I want.
Yeah. It's like a captain's chair.
Yeah. It makes me feel like I'm with her.
All right. Second one. Amanda, I'm sorry. Do you think it's a good idea then?
It's a weird idea, but
weird as hell.
It is, but I can still respect it. And what I thought about when this question was posed to us is Coco.
Pixar movie?
Yeah.
Yes, the Pixar
that's what
movie.
They're doing. They go into.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're there and they're sitting with their family and their family. Now, I mean, whatever your beliefs are, whether you believe that there are spiritual beings next to you and ghosts and stuff like that, but for some people, that might be there. They might feel like they have that connection with their family members who have passed away. And so it does give them that experience to watch a movie with their family who have passed on. So while I think it's a really great idea, I'm with John on the point of as long, and this is, I'm very strongly on this, as long as it's kept up well. And if you don't expect your tax dollars to increase by a tiny bit and you complain when it does happen, but you're for this, then I'm going to be real mad at you because somebody has to upkeep those grounds.
Yeah, man. Wow.
That took a weird turn. That took a darker turn than anything else in a graveyard could have.
Yeah, we got politics and taxes in that one. I don't even know how that happened. All right, John, so you're having a movie night because you're dead, and people are sitting their ass, their big, sweaty, all worked all day ass on your name, which feels like that's actually ironic in a way. What do you want them to watch? What's the movie you want them to watch?
Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2.
Why?
Because I don't know, it seems like the most me thing I could think of at the time.
Okay. All right. That's an interesting one. Amanda, what would be your movie that you want people to watch?
Well, I would do the entire franchise of Harry Potter if I could, but I don't think my family loves me that much.
That's a long night.
It is. My first instinct is to say Boondock Saints. But given the context of the film, I feel like that's a really bad choice. Because that's a lot of death and despair. And even though there's a lot of humor and it's really great and fun and the best movie ever made, I would probably have to go with the Breakfast Club.
So did you basically just pick three movies in this? No. You got like Harry Potter's collection, you got Boondock, and now you're at Breakfast Club?
Yeah, I almost threw in Scream too, okay, then I was like one? Another murder. Pick one.
We've only got one death to worry about.
Well, what if this is like a reoccurring every Friday night flick thing?
How determined to bond with you do you think people are going to be?
I really hope they're this determined.
Yeah, every week, let's go hang out at Amanda's grave and watch different
movies
that she
likes. Can you sit next to my headstone, though? Not on top of it, like next to it? Put your arm around it or something
going,
if you want.
I'm not going, so I don't know. You must be talking to John because I'm not going to do this. This is weird.
I would probably go with, and I thought about The Dark Knight too, or Batman Begins.
Pick one. Breakfast Club. Pick one.
Amanda, it's going to be a marathon.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Breakfast Club.
You're going to have to do yours at AMC. There's no way that they can get all those movies playing in one graveyard.
She might actually have her ashes spread in AMC.
See,
that would be a great idea.
I would do mine totally different. If you're going to come out and celebrate me or remember me or whatever the hell the word choice would be, without a doubt, Return of the Living Dead. That's what okay. I want people to watch. If you're going to be in a cemetery having a movie night, I want blood slobbering zombies, and I want Sunmore Caps, and I want all of that. That's what I want. Bad.
Kind of surprised you didn't go with Evil Dead.
No, because it doesn't happen in a cemetery. Return of the Living Dead happens in a cemetery.
I get it, but I just feel like it's a great one.
No, Return of the Living Dead is a great one for that particular location and that particular event. So right. I'm just saying I nailed it. It's better than Harry
Good
Potter,
and
it's better
logic.
Than all
okay,
16
let's
movies
back
you picked. All right, now we're going to move on to our significant anniversary, which is some motherfuckers are always trying to ice skate uphill. That's right, Blade.
Love
Blade.
This movie.
On August 21st, Blade turns 20. Wesley Snipes as the comic book anti-hero of the vampire world is, to me, the true kickstart to the superhero world we live in today. And I would say that's not really debatable, but you might debate it. John, you agree or disagree?
I actually agree. People sit there and try to say that it was the Dark Knight that did this. And no, it was actually Blade that did it first. Blade who walked up and said, hey, here's a cool vampire anti-hero kind of story. And oh, by the way, it's a comic book, but you all don't know that. And everyone fell in love with it and everyone had a good time and everyone enjoyed it. And then they kept on seeing the Marvel thing show up for each iteration. And they're going, is this a comic book? And I think that's how it kind of started.
Well, many people thought the X-Men kicked off the comic book era we live in, or Spider-Man. I'm like, no, go back, man. 1998, it was freaking Blade. It was Wesley Snipes and that smile and everything else that came out. It was Wesley Snipes. So
I think what made it the best was that Wesley Snipes wore glasses through 90% of that movie.
What made it great is following his career as Blade to the third movie where he actually demanded that they call him Blade while they filmed it. Is really all you need to know about this entire franchise.
And wait, Wesley what? Snipes himself.
You didn't know this? In Blade Trinity, he so hated David Goyer, he demanded that he called him Blade. He had to call him Blade.
Wow.
He had to call him Blade. Like, they hated each other. And apparently he and Ryan Reynolds did not get along at all because he felt offended that they tried to make it a Ryan Reynolds movie.
That's the kind of level of petty I aspire to be one day.
You're not there already?
No.
That's a special.
We'll get there, John.
You know what? You can say petty. I think it's cool. Man, if I was doing Blade 3 and Wesley Snipes showed up and I'm like, hey, Wesley. He's like, no, you call me Blade. What? No, you call me Blade. I just sit there and be, all right, Blade. You got it.
Whatever you say, got it, Blade.
You're the man, Blade.
I don't know if I would be able to pull it off without some sort of tone of annoyance with it. Hey, Blade.
That's how you get your ass beat, son. Every time. That's how you get your ass beat.
He's too pretty to beat my ass.
Of all the characters to click, why do you think Blade at that time, while other comic book flips were flopping left and right, why do you think Blade did so well?
I think for that one, it's because, like John said, it didn't feel like it was a comic book movie. People didn't realize that it was a comic, and it wasn't made cheaply, I would say. I feel like it paved the way for movies like The Matrix and Underworld, that gloomy, dark tone with a lightness to the characters in a weird way, where it was really experimental at that time. And I think that's what did it. It didn't only set off comic book movies to be something that we all could love and didn't see as that nerdy thing. We could see it as a genuinely badass character. But we were able to get other types of movies and franchises that kicked off with, I feel, the inspiration from Blade. Whether it truly came from that or not, it really made it possible for that type of world to exist. And that was only like a year or 5 years later for those two that I mentioned.
I say it was Wesley Snipes. All Wesley Snipes.
Probably. He was really cool. I mean, he still is pretty cool.
Well, yeah, he definitely sold the role pretty well. And I already said it. People weren't really aware that they were seeing a comic book movie. And that's kind of, I think, how... I believe that's how Marvel came around and decided, hey, you know how we sneak in and start getting people to watch this stuff, right? Let's trick them into it. And by tricking them in, I think that's how they got us all.
And can I just say, Stephen Dorff has never been this cool in anything he's ever done.
Oh, no. This was like the peak of his career, and then he kind of just fell off into...
It was the peak. It was his career. This one movie was his career. And I always really liked how, you know, if you're a Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan, it's not new to you. But when you first see those vampires get dusted with real money behind it, it looks pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It does.
It was pretty good, guys. But really, for me, it was like the reason why that movie worked, and 100% was Wesley Snipes, because everything he does is just so cool and just cool. Just
super smooth.
Super smooth. Smooth? Smool? I don't know what I just said. Smooth is
fine. We can add that to the dictionary.
Whatever it was, it clearly wasn't smooth.
All right. Well, that leads me to a bigger question. So now we are here 20 years later. We've had Twilight. We've had the Vampire Diaries. We've had all of this kind of neutering of the vampire mythos. Are vampires still even interesting, do you think? Or are we kind of, at least at this point in time, are vampires the new Western, where we're just kind of going to take some time away from them for a while?
I think we really do need some time away from them. But if you try to bring vampires back to the forefront, you need to step away from this girly, and I'm sorry for saying it that way, so don't write me hate mail, but this girly feelings, vampires are lovers kind of thing. Let them be the monsters they are. And that's one of the things that Blade did well. They were people, sure, and sure they had needs, but they were monsters, and it was very clear. And this whole idea of like every girl's got to turn around a vampire and make him a better person or whatever, we just need to get away from that. Let them be the monsters they are, and I think they can be interesting told the right way.
Okay, so I'm going to...
Oh, the girl's going to speak.
No. Let me get where I'm going.
I'm just kidding. I'm really offended by Johnny's comments.
I'm not offended by them at all.
Because you're here. Oh, what? Damn it. I guess that makes me the girl.
So vampires are innately romantic and sexual. The concept of vampires have always been that. The twist that we've seen lately, which is fine because then it got younger groups interested in a monster that they might not have either been interested or allowed to be interested in. But it took it into a way where it was all about emotions and it was all about those feelings. And that's great. I mean, it's fun for a CW show. Don't get me wrong. I do like those shows. don't like the Twilight movies, but that's a whole different topic. But when you go down to the basis, to the core of what vampires are, it's not about feelings. That's what they lack. They lack that empathy. Now, they might be romantic and sexualized creatures because that's what they are. Mm-hmm. That's what drives them. I mean, you think of all throughout many, many years going back.
They're the ultimate sinner.
Yeah. Well, and you, if you think about what sucking blood symbolizes, that's a very sexual act. And that's been discussed in
a little bit.
Maybe it's your house, all right? Not in this house.
No, this has been a discussion.
Freaky home you live in.
People who have actually read the books and had the philosophical discussions related to vampires, it is something that's very sexualized. And so you can't really take that away, and I don't think you should take that away. But I think—
Are they aware of HPV?
Does it even still exist, though, if it's through the vampires? Because they're not dead, or they're not living, so it doesn't
stay. I don't
know.
Can vampires get HIV? I don't know how the rules work. What are the—
We should look into this.
Vampirism is a virus. Yeah. They're already infested by something.
Or infected. Not necessarily infested, but—
I don't know. I mean, it depends on the story.
So I agree with John that we should take that deep, intricate, teen CW emotion feely thing out of it. And it should be about creatures and monsters doing things that you don't necessarily expect and that twist you in a different way as a viewer. And that's what we love about vampires. Until they're ready to get back to that, I think we need to leave vampires alone. It's turned into a parody. And I don't like that.
I couldn't agree more. Vampires have been, and I use the word neutered because they've been neutered. Because every time I watch a vampire movie now, it's about some typically a female who falls in love with a— it's Angel. Okay, everybody wants to make Angel the movie,
but he was still dark.
Well, he had moments of darkness, but these still do. You can watch Vampire Diaries, and they're all, hey, they used to be really evil, but now they're feeling— because Nina Dobrev popped up. You know, we got to be better people, and we can't be evil, sadistic monsters like we've always been. I mean, come on. I want vampire. I didn't watch the show, and I don't care.
I would argue with you then.
I would just say vampires are monsters. Inherently, they are monsters. They are romantic, but not in the loving way. They're romantic, right. And that's just how they go about with their sexuality. They're just more— – they're smooth. They are Ricky Martin for vampires, all right? But they're sadistic Ricky Martin. They're like really evil Ricky Martin. I don't know why I brought out Ricky Martin.
You keep saying his name,
half
too.
The people don't even know who Ricky Martin is, but he lives La Vida Loca.
They also use that romance.
Living La Vida Loca.
I knew he was going to sing it. They also use that romance just as a means of luring. So that's a very different take. Can I ask you guys something real quick, though?
Is it outside, inside out? Living the Vida Loca?
What's the question?
If you had to say what your perfect vampire movie or character is, who would you choose?
Oh, that's easy. Fright Night.
Okay.
Ooh,
that is
okay.
Easy.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Fright Night is the perfect example for what you're both talking about. We're all talking about. It's the romantic, sexualized vampire, because he seems like— – I mean, I wanted to do Jerry Dandridge. I'm watching that movie and go, man, I want to be so gay right now. I just want to go Dandridge it up. I want
both
all
versions
that damage.
Of him.
What's that?
Both versions of him.
Yeah, I mean, even when he was a vampire, I'm like, he's still kind of smooth.
Well, I'm saying like even the Anton Yelchin version of him.
Oh, the new Fright Night. Yeah. He was even— Colin Farrell. He was even cool there. It's just it's a character I love, and that's to me the idyllic vampire. But I'm talking the 1985 one. I love the 1985.
That's great.
I love that movie. What about you, John?
I think I'm in the mood for more like 30 Days of Night vampires.
Ooh, sadistic, violent.
Yeah. Yeah, like actual monsters, actual scary monsters. Sure, if they wanted to turn up the sex appeal, they could, but they don't need to in that sort of story.
Well, Dracula is obviously the most iconic, but there are so many iterations of it. One that I do want to
pick
throw,
one, Amanda.
That's way too hard.
You're
for me.
On a limit. You pick one.
Why don't you just go crazy and choose Blackula?
She's probably never seen Blackula.
Go ahead. I have not.
Oh, all right. Never mind.
For Fright Night, I do get where Aaron's coming from. One of my favorites, and not necessarily the best vampire iteration, but that would be The Lost Boys. Mm. I love that movie and those characters, and you know what they're going to do. You know how they're going to act, but they just, especially Kiefer, he had like a really weird way of kind of, I don't know, making me want to be a part of that, but also kind of like, oh, you're really creepy and weird. He's not the perfect vampire, by standards of being a vampire, but it's I really, really like
that. That movie answers the age-old question. What do you do if all your friends jump off a bridge?
It does.
Yep, you jump. Because apparently it's the time of your life, man. It's awesome. All right, so Marvel has the rights back, but they haven't done anything with them. Would you want to see a new Blade movie or a TV series, or just let it be for a while?
I think we can all speak for Wesley Snipes when we say yes. As long as he's attached to it, I don't think he would let anyone play that role unless he were already dead.
I would still be okay with Wesley Snipes being
me too.
Yeah. What about you, John?
I would say that Marvel needs a really good 8-episode Blade series.
I'm with you. Where Wesley Snipes is Blade handing the baton off to someone else. That's what I think. Like he's the mentor or something.
Well, he doesn't even need to mentor anybody because he's half vampire. He doesn't age, so he doesn't even need to mentor anybody.
Yeah, but I mean, he has aged. I mean, he's still in good shape, but he doesn't look like 20 years ago Wesley Snipes. He's done time.
They can edit that.
He's done time.
He's done real time.
It changes a man.
It does change a man. Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, I think at some point we might get something. It'll probably be on that Disney streaming service, though. That's the only way they would get me to pay for that.
I would pay for it. I totally would.
Well, good. Then I'll just use your login.
You got me on that.
What? We're not sharing my login, okay?
We'll share it with the listeners, too. Don't worry. All right, well, Patreon supporters, we want to take a second and say thank you to our Patreon supporters who donated at patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. This month, we are giving away either Avengers Infinity War or Deadpool 2 to one lucky winner. You have to be a $3 or up tier member to do that. And also, our fall movie preview will be exclusive to Patreon supporters and should be up later this week. So be sure to check that out.
Going to be the super duper cut?
Yes. Of course. I mean, you mean for Deadpool 2? If they want it, they either get Infinity War or Deadpool. You don't get both. You get to pick one. Whoever wins gets to pick one. And then that's the one they get. But it's got to be super duper cut, right?
Yeah, killing baby Hitler is worth it, right?
Oof, man.
Is it going to have that in the cut?
In the super
duper cut? Yes, in the super duper cut it does.
Makes Deadpool 2 worth buying right there, doesn't it?
Oh, man.
But don't spoil it. Don't say what that all means. Okay, now we've got two reviews. One is worth talking about. Amanda, take it away.
Wait, which one?
Well, we'll find out.
We will find out.
The one that I saw.
So, well, actually, you both saw it.
Well, John, did you actually see the Meg? You didn't see it, right?
I didn't see it. I got too caught up in watching weird stuff this weekend.
That's just me. I've actually seen this movie twice, people. I've seen it twice.
So you can count for you and John.
One on IMAX. Voice. I can count for both of us. I'm doing both of our reviews. I will do it doubly, and I will even do it in a Statham voice.
Please do.
All right, Amanda, why don't you tell me about that? Why don't you ask me questions about this? I'm Jason Statham. I came by to talk about my movie.
This is actually better than your salon.
Oh, man, it is. Please bring him back all the time. All right, so Aaron,
Can you do it as one as Stallone and Jason Statham giving the review?
Hey, I don't know if I can do it. Hey, Jason, you wanna talk about his movie? Yeah, I really want to talk about my movie. It was very good.
Oh my god, it works!
All right, I'm so in for this. Come on, let's do this.
All right.
I couldn't do that the whole time. So, I'd love to.
There's only a couple questions. You can do it. Okay. So the Meg. You saw the Meg. A massive creature attacks.
Meg, not Mag.
I said Meg.
I know, but the way it's Mag.
where are these accents coming from all of a sudden?
I don't know. Continue. I'm sorry I cut you off. That was so rude of me.
That was so rude of him. Why did we talk about my movie?
Okay. A massive creature attacks a deep sea submersible, leaving it disabled and trapping the crew at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean. With time running out, rescue diver Jonas Taylor must save the crew and the ocean itself from an unimaginable threat, a 75-foot-long prehistoric shark known as the Megalodon. Now, Aaron Statham, yes. Stallone.
Yo.
You read the book.
Sorry. Continue, giggle fits.
You read the book that this is based off of. What did you think in comparison?
Statham don't read.
It compared to the book, it's really nothing like the book. The book is a lot more serious and dark. And it's part of like a 6-book series. I only read the first book, though.
Okay.
It's similar, but different. The opening's completely different. That's not how it went at all, where he comes back to go save his ex-wife because she's trapped down at the ocean's floor, and that's what ends up basically freeing the Megalodon. It compares in terms of it's the same basic plot. You have a 70-foot shark that is scary as hell, and he's basically on his way to the Chinese coast, and he's going to mess some stuff up.
Okay, so they basically just retained the most simplistic part of it so they could say
it's still the basic plot of it, yeah.
With as absurd as it was, this as absurd as I'm imagining, because I haven't seen it yet, and it looks pretty ridiculous. I don't know if it's just because of who they cast in the movie or the premise. Mean me.
Why you got a problem with
Ruby Rose, sure.
Oh, she was awful. She's the worst crier.
Ruby Rose can't cry.
It was the worst crier I've ever seen in my life. Just hideous. John's not wrong. She can't act.
I don't know. Did you see her cry after she deactivated her Twitter?
Oh, don't be sad. Sad panda. Aww. It's yes, but it's ridiculous in the right way. Because here's the thing. It's not campy. It doesn't go so far as to be campy, which is where it's not like Snakes on a Plane. You know, Snakes on a Plane just got too campy, too ridiculous. It actually takes – the movie itself takes itself pretty serious. It feels like these are real stakes. They're really trying to deal with it. But there are a lot of things that are ridiculous. Like at one point, Statham does kick a shark. That's a true story. I mean, you see it in the trailer, you're like, he's not going to kick a shark. Yeah, he's going to kick a shark. But he also, I mean, he goes full Statham in this movie. He used to be a professional diver. So there are a lot of scenes where he is doing dive moves and swimming and underwater, and he's doing it and he's great at it. Like, you're watching that impressed as hell. And then secretly wishing you could be half as cool as this dude. And he's like 51 and they have a scene where he's shirtless they have to. Okay. Dude is ripped.
Yes, he is
ripped. I am ripped. Just ripped. So, yeah.
So there is a grounding to the story, even with it's as very, ridiculous as it is.
It knows what it wants to be. It's not trying to be Jaws. It's not a completely serious movie. Okay. It's a fun shark movie with humor in it. So it has jokes. And I don't know if Statham knew that while he was filming it, but there's definitely some jokes. And when Ruby Rose cries,
I have a question for Mr. Statham. I have a question for Mr. Statham.
Oh, yeah. What can I do for you?
So there's a lot of articles right now that are coming around that are saying that this is not the movie that you signed up for.
Hey, Statham, don't read.
It's not about you reading. It's about you saying. So you said that this isn't the movie you signed up for. What movie do you think you signed up for, Mr. Statham?
I thought it would be Jaws. Yeah.
All right.
I thought it would be Jaws. It's not the movie I signed up for. No. And my accent changed.
All right. Now you're starting to lose Statham.
Yeah. You know what? Don't talk to me about what Statham is, all right? Statham is who Statham wants to be.
My final question, Mr. Statham, is this still kid appropriate? Can you take your family to go see it, or is it too bloody or too scary?
Jason Statham doesn't have a family.
There were a lot of kids there, but do I think they should have been? It's not bloody and gory, which is what John was alluding to, because Statham did actually say, I thought I was making a gory, bloody movie. I'm like, you were there, dude. You didn't bring this up? At some point, you and John Turteltaub want to have a conversation like,
hey, I thought there was more blood.
No, it's not blood. It should be blood, right? A shark. Yeah. Whatever. So you can take kids. I would say the PG-13 is warranted, though.
Okay.
But I was at the theater and sitting next to somebody who actually said, you can't make a great shark movie that's PG-13. And I just laughed my ass off because I'm like, no. You've obviously never seen a great shark movie then.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Because it was PG. Jaws, just so you know.
Wow. Kids. Crazy. Yeah. So if the full price of admission were $10, what would you give The Meg?
Well, it's dumb. But it's fun. $6.50.
And if you want to read a really fun review, go read Dave McGraw's review on The Meg.
It made me laugh out loud.
It was really funny.
TheHollywoodOutsider.com made me laugh out loud. I don't laugh out loud when I read reviews very often. Amanda, you saw Crazy Rich Asians on the big screen, not in real life. This is what this movie is about. It's adapted from the book by Kevin Kwan. Crazy Rich Asians follows Rachel Wu, an American-born Chinese economics professor who travels to her boyfriend Nick's hometown of Singapore for his best friend's wedding. Before long, his secret is out. Nick is from a family that is impossibly wealthy. He's perhaps the most eligible bachelor in Asia, and every single woman in his ultra-rarefied social class is incredibly jealous of Rachel and wants to bring her down.
Don't let her break Jay. Don't bring Rachel down.
So I got to stop that. The modestly budgeted $30 million film is the first Hollywood studio movie since the Joy Luck Club 25 years ago to feature an all westernized Asian cast. That's pretty important, I think, to the Asian community, including Constance Wu and Henry Golding and the producers and director John Chu. They turned down a deal at Netflix to ensure that this movie saw a theatrical release because it means that much to the Asian community. So movies are always movies first. We agree on that. So was Crazy Rich Asians entertaining?
Absolutely. And I will say that there is one of the most beautiful scenes I have ever seen in a movie, ever in this film. It was incredible. I seriously dropped my jaw because the movie is about Nick bringing his girlfriend Rachel to Singapore to go to his best friend's wedding.
I think I just said that.
You did. So at the wedding, you're going to see what you would imagine you would, if you're from America, you probably can't really depict how their weddings might be. But I will tell you that this is not just from somebody who likes weddings and not just as someone as a woman, but this is the most beautiful thing I have ever seen. The way that they crafted this scene for the wedding when she first walks out is immaculate. Seriously. Hmm. And if there's anything that drives you to go see it, I will seriously tell you, it's that scene.
What about the rest of the movie?
The rest of the movie is really good. And it's one of those that is driven by the emotion of the story. And it has a lot of really great comedy from Awkwafina, which I was really impressed
by her.
She was
so good in Ocean's 8, too.
She was. Yeah. But in this, she seriously takes the screen. Whenever she's on it, my attention is fully on her because she's so hilarious. And I don't think that it's just the way it was scripted. It's the way that she really exudes her performance. She really made it. But it is really well put together. It's well-rounded. And I'm sure you're probably going to want to talk about the cultural part of it.
Well, I kind of want to know, Is it campy? Is it played straight? Is it comedy, rom-com? What exactly is it?
I would say more.
Commercials aren't helping me understand.
I would say more rom-com. And I just put together a review on it. So hopefully that helps lead people into what it's like. When you first get into it, as somebody who's used to American films, it'll take you a second to kind of situate yourself with it because the text is very Asian culture. The music is very Asian culture. They take a lot of American songs and they put the Asian twist on them. Mm. So it's really interesting to hear, but it's very different to sit there and say, I know, what is this song? I know this song. And you're realizing it's in a foreign language. That's why I don't know what it is right now. But the way that it all plays out ends up making you feel like you're able to see both sides of the story because this is a very divisive situation for the American female and the Asian man and his family. And so you're able to really see how she and her family feel as Americans and also why Nick's family feels the way that they do as an Asian culture and why family is so important.
So you learn a lot about Asian culture through this
movie? You do. And not in an overt way where they're, you know, kind of slamming your face in it, but just the way that they go about the screenplay and the performances, you're able to kind of infer from that and see what it could be like. And I think some people will be able to relate to it in America if you're not with someone who's in an Asian culture, even with somebody between like a white and black relationship, that interracial connection, I think you'll be able to see that and understand something more.
So any standouts from the cast? Anybody? Oh, you said Awkwafina.
Awkwafina, so, yeah. For sure. Yeah. It was actually pretty well-rounded in terms of all of the performances. There wasn't anybody else who really grabbed my attention. The main girl, whose name is evading me right
Constance
now.
Constance Wu?
Yes. She was really adorable, but her mom stood out, or his mom, Nick's mom, and I don't know the actress's name either. She was really great. She made me go, wow, a few times. And I don't know if that's just how it normally.
And her performance or what was happening on screen?
A little bit of both. Yeah. But I think the way that she did it.
She's so audacious or something?
She crosses some lines, man. And I did not expect, not necessarily physical lines, but just the words that she uses and the way she says them shock you.
So if $10 is full price for admission, what do you give Crazy Rich Asians?
$8.
Wow.
It was really good.
All right. Johnny, we got some new releases that I don't really give a two shits about, but why don't we go through them?
All right. So the first thing we shouldn't give two shits about is Alpha, coming out on the 17th. The epic adventure of The Last Ice, it's a dog story. So it's about the first dog that everyone kind of falls in love with, whatever. This is directed by Albert Hughes, stars Cody Schmidt-McPhee, Natasha Malfi. I mean, they're probably not even speaking English through this whole thing.
So it's basically they were cavemen looking for a dog?
Basically is what it turns out to be.
Okay, that's interesting. Next.
So then we have Mile 22. This is coming to us from Peter Berg, so that's something to be excited about. An elite American intelligence officer, aided by a top-secret tactical command unit, struggles to smuggle mysterious police officer with sensitive information out of the country. This stars Lauren Cohan, Mark Wahlberg, Ronda Rousey. Peter Berg's actually in it and directing it. Wow! John Malkovich and Aiko Uwais. That's fun
Marky
to say.
Mark!
Then we have on Netflix on 8/17, To All the Boys I've Loved Before, a teenage girl's secret letter, love letters to are exposed and wreak havoc on her life. This is directed by Susan Johnson, and it stars a whole bunch of people. I have no idea who they are, but it's on Netflix, so it's probably a lot of fun. Maybe. Hopefully. Fingers crossed. And then we have The Motives on Netflix also this weekend. A man obsessed with the idea of writing high literature starts to cause conflicts, I'm sorry, around him to write and writes about it. This is probably in Spanish, so it's just give you fair warning. Stars Javier Gutierrez, Maria Leon. It looks like an interesting story. It's also, I call it my friend's the real life thing. I don't know.
Interesting.
Well, I have friends that. What kind of books do you like to read? I only read high literature. What the hell's the matter with you people? Okay, so of these movies, Aaron, what are you thinking you're going to see this week?
Maybe go see The Meg again and then Mile 22. Yeah, I'll see Mile 22. It's one of those dumb action flicks, but it doesn't look that great. But I like Peter Berg. He's a good director, so there's a good chance it actually might be a fun movie.
Yeah. Amanda?
Well, I'm definitely going to see Mile 22 because Marky Mark, I love him and I'll watch anything he's in. I don't care if it's bad or good. So I am excited about that. But I also want to see those two on Netflix because they seem interesting and I'm willing to read subtitles or learn Spanish over the weekend. That's fine.
That's a good way to learn Spanish is to watch something in Spanish and have subtitles on it.
True.
There you go.
Or you have your wife yell at you in Spanish, which might happen more than it should.
Slower. That's the right space.
You know, it doesn't work like that. It's more like, what did I do? I can't understand a word you're saying. How do I know what I did?
See, if my wife spoke Spanish, I'd be doing stuff wrong on purpose just to get yelled at in Spanish. But that's weird bringing up.
That's a different topic.
This is going so weird. What about you, John? What do you want to see? Stop freaking me out.
Oh, sure. This is where we start freaking people out. Of all the stuff we talked about this show, I'm the one who crossed the line first. I'm thinking I want to see To All the Boys I Loved Before. It looks like a great little comedy piece, a teenage girl story about how her letters got passed out from like every time she has a crush on somebody, she writes a letter to them and then doesn't expect them to ever get to the person. I think we've all kind of been there. I know I've done stuff like that when I was a teenage person. So I think it'd be interesting.
All right. Now we go to our From the Outside In topic. This is going to be interesting. When 24 hit the air many years ago, it was an eye-opener in terms of what television could do. For 24 consecutive episodes, this series told one single day's worth of story, each episode leading directly into the next. It kind of left little chance to actually jump into the show mid-season and have any idea what the hell was going on. It was a novelty, and it was fantastic to watch unfold. Way back in 2015 of our show, on episode 190, we discussed the differences between serialized and procedural television, and we named some of our favorites. Well, flash forward to 2018, and it seems like every show is doing this. Unless you're a slave to CBS, TV is dominated by the season-long arc. Some are even taking it a step further, like Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad, Walking Dead, and making the entire series one singular story. So this topic this week is kind of simple, but also kind of complicated. Has it gotten to be too much? Have we finally arrived at the breaking point? This week, our topic is television getting too serialized? So first, we should clarify. Do you have a preference, serialized, meaning one story over a whole season or series, or procedural, meaning self-contained in one episode? Do you have a preference, John?
I think I can, with great confidence, say that my preference since early childhood has probably been serialized.
How so? I mean, why since early childhood?
Well, it's something. Well, I've been visiting with a lot of anime that I grew up watching or that I watched in the 90s, and the thing about some of the better animes is that they are a serialized story, and they've been doing it since the early 80s on. So things I watched growing up was always something where the character was changing. The character was what happened last episode actually mattered this episode. And I became very accustomed to the idea that, like, I'm watching somebody live a life versus like watching a video game where each time you put the quarter in, it's something different and nobody's learned anything.
Yeah, I know I definitely prefer serialized shows. The only time that I don't is if it's just like a raw comedy. But even then, the ones that I typically tend to lean towards have some sort of overarching structure of story throughout the show. It's just you can understand what's going on in that episode without seeing the rest of it. So things like The Office, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Parks and Rec, things like that, they're not necessarily serialized, but they're more procedural, but they still have a story that continues throughout the show or the season. Because I lose interest.
Or they have consequences. They have consequences that matter episode to episode.
Yeah, there you go. But I do lose interest really fast if there's not a story for me to connect with or characters to look forward to or something like that. I have to stay engaged in it, and being serialized helps me stay engaged with what's going to happen next.
If you had asked me 3 years ago, it'd be serialized without a second thought. But honestly, once everything became serialized, I found myself really missing procedural TV because I can't just drop in and drop out. So I'm still leaning on serialized, but I am getting exhausted with it, which kind of brings me to the topic. Are TV shows too serialized now? And I want to clarify, it's not really – the topic isn't meant to justify which one you like. We get it. Everybody likes what they like, and it seems like we all together kind of prefer serialized. But do we have too much of it to the point where we don't have anything – we don't have the variety that we used to have? Where it used to be too many procedural shows, now we have too many serialized shows. Do we think we have that? So where do you guys stand? I mean, in terms of, are you exhausted by it?
Well, I can tell that you're exhausted by it. And
I sure am.
You do a lot of podcasts, so you probably don't have a lot of time to invest in all of the different types of shows. And I think that's...
Hey, just quit one. So there's 5 hours.
Wait,
back.
Which one was that?
Remake this movie, right? Which its final episode has already aired.
What's it take for people to get that back?
Go to Patreon. There is a tier that they can donate to. And if they hit that number, that goal, then we'll bring it back once a month.
Oh, my gosh. We should just post it as a fundraiser.
Let's stop whoring out. Go ahead.
Let's stop that. But I think the reason there are so many serialized shows is because people are wanting it. So can we really say that there are too many if that's really what people are wanting? The problem, I think, comes where there's too many good serialized shows where we can't keep up with it. Netflix alone, I can't keep up with their serialized shows. I don't have the time commitment to be able to invest in it. That is the problem for me. But the content and the shows themselves, I don't have a problem with that. I just have a problem with being able to watch it all.
There is a good point to that there are too many good ones. It seems like most of the serialized shows are actually pretty strong these days. But I also think there's not really – they're not making as many procedurals anymore either. So it's kind of hard to – you can do a procedural and still have a serialized nature. Like Hawaii Five-O, I love it. That is my check the brain at the door kind of TV show. But even they have a serialized structure where something's still happening throughout the season and stuff. But I can watch any episode and there's a plot that is resolved by the end of it. Whereas if you watch Walking Dead, if you don't go back to season one – you don't know who the hell these people are for the most part. If you watch Game of Thrones and you jump in season six, good luck. Good luck knowing anything about that show. You have to start from the beginning. There's definitely pros and cons. I actually broke down a whole pro and con list. But John, where do you stand? Like, where are you feeling with this? Do you feel overwhelmed at all? Because I am.
I've been feeling overwhelmed by my show options for a long time. And I think it's one of the reasons why I'm revisiting a lot of older stuff lately that maybe I didn't have a full grasp of before. So that being said, I think that, yeah, it is something where we have too much going on to be able to make a smart choice as to what we want to invest our time in. God, I was just, the more I think about it, it's, I do sort of miss shows like Psych, where I can drop in and have a good time and see and spend some time with people that I like. But then again, Psych was something where episode to episode consequences carried over, and that's why we, you know, Sean and Gus at the beginning of the series is different from Sean and Gus at the end of the series.
Yeah, but you could watch any episode of that show
and understand the
dynamic. And understand basically what's going on. You can't jump into so many shows. These like Handmaid's Tale. You can't just jump in season two and really know what the frack is going on.
Though.
You can't jump into Castle Rock, brand new show. Go jump into episode four. You'll have no idea what the hell is going on with anything. That part is getting
the other side of this is that with so much TV on demand, where people can just like buy a membership to something and all of a sudden they have all the episodes available to them, doesn't matter that they can't just jump into it.
Well, see, that's where I disagree. It matters.
It was a question. It was a question, not a statement.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Say it again, because I heard it as a statement because all I was right. getting my answer ready.
Right. What I said is, does it matter that you can't jump in? Because you have once you pay your membership fee, you immediately have access to everything on it.
Yes, because I want more options. And this is just a me thing. I feel like I can't watch any show that isn't something I have to start from the beginning. It's to me that's really frustrating because I would like something where once you watch the first episode, you know who the characters are, and then I can come back to it 3 months from now and watch an episode, and then 2 months from then and watch an episode. And you can't do that with serialized shows because you'll forget half of what happened, and every episode carries into the next. And I'm sorry, Previously On doesn't always really do it justice for what happened. I remember 24, which I've seen the entire series at least three times. Don't judge me, but I have. And if you drop in mid-season of any of those shows, I still would be lost, and I've already seen it three times because there's so much that happens before it. That's the stuff that frustrates me. I would like more options. Since we have so many, I would like more options of where I could just drop in and drop out.
Well, and to that point of what your question is, John, does it matter? It does to the extent that, yes, you could sit down and you could devote an entire weekend to binging that show. Okay, that's great. But if you don't have that time and you just hear the show came on and it was really, really great, but it's a serialized show, if you've only got an hour on this day and an hour on that day, it's hard to break that binging habit to go back and be like, okay, I'm only going to watch one episode today, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to watch an episode in two more days, and then I'm going to forget about what happened. That happens to me all the time.
I get what you're saying, and I understand it, but I think the whole idea of like, do I have time to binge this show to catch up to it? That's a personal issue. That's a personal choice. Well,
I get that, but come on, let's be reasonable here. You go to the, oh my God, the CW, which has the most glorious television, obviously.
Right.
They have all these superhero shows, and, or even, you know what? Take the 100. We'll take the one show that's not a superhero show on their network anymore, or vampire show. You can't
Supernatural.
I don't watch the show, so I don't know what its nature. I don't know if it's serialized or not. So I'm just going with the one I know. You go to watch the 100. I think there's 16 episodes serialized. You can't jump in mid season. Arrow. You can't jump in mid season. A superhero show, which you think would be saving somebody's ass every week, you can't jump in mid season because they have a villain and they have an entire arc that lasts the entire year. So it's like one giant story for 22 plus episodes, man. That's excessive. And how other than I'm rich, I'm filthy rich, and I get to sit on my ass and watch TV all day, how can people find the time to watch all this stuff? At some point, you just want to be able to throw something on and not have to worry about where it is in the story mm-hmm. to enjoy it. Does that mean? I mean, that's kind of where I'm not saying those things aren't good. I'm saying there's too many of them.
Well, or maybe there's just not enough procedural. So maybe the issue isn't
that. I would say Arrow's not good right now.
Maybe the issue isn't that we have too many serialized shows, because I think we've all come to the consensus that at least the ones that we have are really good options. but maybe we just don't have enough procedural options for us to be able to, in between the shows that we're watching that are serialized, throw something on while we're cooking, still enjoy that for what it is.
That's what I think.
Yeah. But I will say there is one person in the world who continues to bring back procedurals, and that is Nathan Fillion, because he has another one coming this fall. He will not let them go away. So if you need one.
We don't know if it's going to be end up being a procedural anyways, because even Castle had an overlying story every season.
But you could understand each episode to episode.
Yeah, but each one was like a crime of the week.
Right. Yeah. Each one was a crime of the week. But see, my problem with that is this, is that, yeah, I enjoyed Castle very much. I thought it was a great show, and I watched it every single week without fail when I had cable. And it was fun. I loved watching Nathan Fillion. I loved seeing the relationship between him and Stanna Katic's character on the show. But because every week I can count on the same things, I started being able to predict what was going to happen next, and by 45 minutes into the show I'm having an awesome dream about something else.
So you're saying you lose focus if it doesn't have that serialized nature, where you feel compelled to pay attention so you don't miss anything, because you know you'll need that information for the next one.
Right. If I need to feel invested into the story, engaged. And if you start making something where I can predict what's going to happen next, I start losing my engagement. Look, there is that person who's a B, C, D level star on something else. He's the perpetrator of the crime. And then I'm like, how many dots are in my ceiling? How many? You know, and it's not that I don't want to pay attention, because I really like those characters and I think the show is funny and good and strong. It's just that it's either A, not funny enough to keep me interested in, or B, it's just too easy to figure it out to even like keep me interested. Like if you take Psych on the other hand, as a show where it's the same sort of thing. You have a story, it's laid out the same thing nearly every single episode, but I could because those characters were just so much fun that the challenge of the show became, what is Sean and Gus going to do next? How is Gus going to react to Sean? What kind of nickname is Sean going to give Gus? The show became more about that than it did about the actual story. And that's completely fine too. And I think it's few and far between to find a story or find people who can actually create something like that.
Maybe my problem is I can't find them. Maybe that's the problem. We have so much. Okay. So how about this? I think we have more quality serialized shows than we've ever had quality shows of any kind in television. Like there are so many, I could go find a really damn good show to watch right now and it wouldn't be a problem, because there are so many. It would probably be a serialized show. What I don't seem to be able to find are as many high quality procedural shows. Maybe that's where the problem lies.
And shows that you like. The procedurals that I know, the ones that you like though. So into that is the ones that we are seeing come out are the ones that are just
NCIS and comedies.
Well, and comedies that have like a weird shtick to it. You know what I mean? Like those that don't really jive with everybody's humor. And that's really hard to explain it. You probably know what I'm referring to, because I know the types of comedies that you don't like that are procedurals.
I don't like most comedies, honestly. I just don't like comedies that much. I like comedy movies. I don't like comedy TV shows. I never find them that funny. But except Night Court, greatest one I ever lived.
I just feel like the procedurals that we're getting are the same ones revisited in a different area or platform or something like that, but it's pretty much the same thing. So while we're getting those options in some respect, they're not different. When it comes to serialized TV shows, we have a plethora of choices that aren't, it isn't just that we have different choices. We have different choices in different genres, focusing on a different time, focusing on different people and different qualities. And there's so many different dynamics in those serialized shows that procedurals aren't really getting, but you can't really give it that much attention and differentiate it when you're limited to that much. And when you don't really need to as a writer for TV, why would you? Because people crave serialized. Well, they like to think.
I've broke this down to some pros and cons. You tell me if you guys agree with these or not. Okay. In terms of pros and cons to serialized TV. Pros, you have time for characters to develop. Tensions continue to escalate throughout the show or season or whatever. Situations grow and unfold a little bit more logically. than they would in a procedural because you kind of have to rush it through every episode. Cons, if a show is canceled, there's no ending or resolution to it. Big problem. Everybody still blames Fox for Firefly. But let's just be, for a lot of things. And, you know, there are a lot of shows that don't get endings because they are canceled one season, two seasons in, you know, whatever. And another one is with so much TV, it means you can't have you can't watch a handful. You have to watch an entire season, which can be frustrating, I think, for a lot of people. And some shows just shouldn't be serialized. I'm a firm believer that the Marvel shows, almost all of them lose me because each season is one long-ass story. You know, like Jessica Jones is perfect for, you can have a season-long villain, but she could help somebody every episode. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But they don't do that. Instead, it's one long-ass story that it worked the first season. It did not work the second season. It just drug on and on and on, and it really made it for a hard watch. So not everything needs to be serialized, but I feel like they just want everything to be serialized because of what John is saying. It takes that to get viewers hooked anymore, and there's so many options, they need to get them hooked.
Right. It's drug peddlers creating the drug for the person, for the masses. So they need that drug to be perfect. And as far as, like, even take Marvel, you brought up Marvel and Netflix. Netflix knows it has a Marvel problem, and it knows it has a Marvel problem because season two of Daredevil wasn't as good. Season two of Jessica Jones, not as good because of all these issues with the fact that they signed these contracts for 13 episode seasons, which I believe when Iron Fist comes out soon, it's actually going to only be 8. They're already trying to course correct with some of the issues with extending things out too far.
Oh, that's only like 20 times he's going to say he's the immortal Iron Fist then.
Right, and that's fine.
cut in half. I'm all right with that.
I have two questions for you guys, if I could.
Okay, go for it.
The first one, for serialized shows particularly, do you think that they would benefit if you still had them, but they cut the length of the seasons down to make it easier to get through? Would that make it more bearable for you guys?
Absolutely. 10 or less is what I think it should be.
Okay.
Absolutely.
My second question is...
And if you're 22 episodes and you have an entire season-long story, piss off.
Grey's Anatomy.
Right.
Grey's Anatomy?
They do.
Do they really? I don't watch it.
I
don't care.
They break them down into about 3 or 4 episodes, but there's like a long length.
She's still talking, John. She's not going to let this go.
I can hear it.
Like, it's season 15. All about people that watch it.
Anatomy. Yeah. So my second question, and bear with me when I ask this because it's a weird question. Do you think that having shows that are serialized and that are streaming, so you binge them, one, increases people's ability to focus in other areas of life, and two, may also increase addiction in some respect?
What? Addiction to what?
Well,
in anything. All right,
so I'm going to field this one. So there's been a lot of studies that say that the people who constantly binge watch shows are suffering from depression, one form or another. I feel that from those studies and from my own personal experience, I feel that's an accurate depiction of what's probably going on. People find something, they latch onto it, they decide that's where they're going to hide for the next few weeks or whatever, just to give themselves a break from whatever's bothering them. So yes, addiction / depression is what's going on when people are streaming binging shows like that. So like whole series that are like 13 seasons long and in like 2 weeks that I may or may not have done.
Me too with Breaking Bad right now.
I mean, not always, because I kind of, if I start watching something and I get hooked, I have to finish it.
But it sounds like you can walk away from that a lot easier.
Oh man, I can throw it away. I got no problem.
Right. And sometimes I can walk away from it or not. But I do think that there is a addiction / some sort of mental distress happening when it goes on. I'm guilty of it, and I think even if you believe it or not, a lot of us are guilty of it. That's just the way life goes sometimes. Sometimes you decide, hey, this is making me happy. I'm going to stick with it for a little bit.
Hey, I'm with you. I mean, that's why we love entertainment, isn't it? Unless you're one of those pretentious podcasts where you're like, you know what, this wasn't artful enough. This should be eligible for the Popular Movie Award. It should be eligible for an actual Oscar. It's not art.
What was the other part of the question, Amanda?
Just real briefly, do you think that it increases people's ability to focus, though? Because they have to focus on a lot of detail that we didn't used to have to focus on for TV shows.
Yes,
and they have to
people
retain
know
that
this
for
stuff.
A long time.
People know these characters, ins and outs, minute detail. Absolutely. I think people, when they really are invested, they are invested. They are cyber sleuths.
It'd be so fascinating to study those results.
I will say that because I've done them at the TV Companion podcast, the people that are invested in TV shows do not miss much. They are so paying attention to every little detail. Why did so-and-so take a drink at that moment? Why is so-and-so wearing those socks? Why did so-and-so open the door for that particular person? Like, everything is paid attention to.
I wonder
to.
If that leads back into their normal day-to-day life, though. That would be interesting.
Well, why is Becky peeing at 3:15 a.m.? Yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's go into some of our listener comments. We each picked a few. I got a couple off Twitter. John, you got a couple, and you and Amanda both got a couple off our Facebook group. So why don't you go ahead, John?
So Sean says, depends on the show. Great storytelling is great storytelling. Whether it's done within an hour or 13 hours, that's what matters. And I really agree with him on his thinking. It's not really about the show or whether it's serialized or not serialized. So long as you tell a good story, that's really what's important.
I agree with that.
Agree.
What else you got?
So Tara QT, which I think Tara QT has like some really good life things happening recently.
She got married.
Congratulations on that.
So she got married. Yes. Congratulations.
All right. So
Jason Statham says congratulations too.
What does Stallone say?
You like marriage is cool. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I love the character build up in a series, but there's so much rubbish out there that they don't always seem to know when to quit whilst they're ahead. I think she's English. That's why she's using all these words that really trip me up.
She's not from America, that's for sure.
Yeah. I would say more miniseries, more quality, but I'm without a doubt a series girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Agree.
Mm-hmm. And I think we all agree because the idea of cutting down the Marvel shows to less than 10 episodes, or a lot of what Netflix is doing with their newer shows is keeping them 8-10 episodes. So I think we are all in agreement, this whole miniseries / smaller episode, really. And I think England does that really well with a lot of their shows, like Doctor Who. They cut it, they keep it pretty trimmed down, too.
Yeah, I would love for Blacklist to be 10 episodes. Amanda.
Shout out to NBC. So Dave McGraw said, I've got nothing against serialized shows as long as A, they don't go past their expiry date and drag things out too long because they're getting good ratings, or B, they have a contingency plan in place to tie things up in case the ratings go south and cancellation is looming. There's nothing worse than devoting hours of time over a season to a show only to be left with a cliffhanger ending that never gets resolved because the axe fell, especially if the producers knew it was coming.
Yeah, that's a big problem.
Mm-hmm. That was on Aaron's cons list.
It definitely was on my cons list. Thanks for paying attention.
Kyle
Thanks
Nolan.
Thanks for listening to that list, Amanda.
Wait, there were lists?
There were always lists. Stay them don't read.
Kyle Nolan says, as someone who watches all or none of TV shows, I don't just randomly pop in. I enjoy it being more serialized. You actually get character growth and more complex storylines. A show that is done well can still have a plot of the week, but can have it apply to a larger story arc. That said, I prefer shorter seasons with serialized shows, not massive 18 to 24 episodes. Seems like we're getting a consensus here.
I think we can all agree on that one.
Yep.
Definitely. At Iron Boots on Twitter, much prefer standalone episodes. So hard to get back into serialized shows if I've taken a break from them. You know, that's a big problem that I find where you get into it and you actually do enjoy it. Handmaid's Tale is a perfect one because I took a break from it and I just could not get back into it because it was such a depressing show that I was invested at the time. But then I came back and it was already like 7 or 8 episodes. And I'm like, I don't want to have to listen. I don't want to watch 7 episodes of pure misery to catch up. So I just never went back to it.
Hey, you should. It's so good.
Yeah, yeah.
Second season is people even
better. Hey, how many more times are you going to say that show is good?
Until he watches it?
Yeah, it's not going to happen. I already made my decision, so.
It's a hard pass.
Mm-hmm. From Page to Screen, who also has a podcast. I prefer the serialized shows. However, the downside to that is if a show has been on for several years and I haven't gotten into it yet, I know I'll lack the time to blitz through 50 episodes to play catch up. Amen.
Mm, yeah.
That's where the binging comes up. Do you have that kind of time? Do you have that kind of quality time? So, all right. Those are the ones. So thank you, everybody, who contributed a comment. You know, we didn't have time to read them all today, but we got a lot of them. So thank you so much for doing that. If you want to participate, you can always go to the Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider. Next week's topic, I'm going to give you a hint. We're going to Muppet up some movies. We're finally going to do John's dream topic. We're going to see what movies would be better if they had Muppets.
I am so excited for this.
Wow, I've never heard him this happy before.
The most joyous he's ever been in his entire life. All right, as we close the show out, any recent film or TV recommendations that we haven't already talked about? Johnny, anything?
I revisited a couple of older movies. Accepted, starring Justin Long, was on Amazon Prime. That's actually still a funny movie, and I really still enjoyed it. The other one that I sat down with was Runaway. Do you remember that movie?
The Tom Selleck movie?
Yeah, the Tom Selleck movie, chases after runaway, falling apart robots kind of thing.
Yeah, and stars, I dug that one.
Yeah, Gene Simmons is the villain who's like, he's turned being a villain, which he only has to really just show up and say normal words like he normally would. But he really cranks it up even more to being gross. It's just such a love that movie. I have so many great memories of watching it. So I sat down and watched that over the weekend, also on Amazon Prime.
Nice, Amanda.
Fun. I have two. The first one is Insatiable, and I don't know if it's necessarily a recommendation, but I have thoughts on it. It's weird. I would be more concerned about the very weird pedophilia than the fat suit, but it actually seems like it might be somewhat interesting if you can get past that and the very obscure humor. So I guess maybe watch it and let us know what you think. And then
sold
question mark
of all the shows on the air, boy, I got to jump on that one.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Right?
Yeah.
Kevin Spacey's probably watching it.
He probably is. He probably applied for
Sorry,
the first
was that
for
a little
that role.
Too close to the burner. I don't know.
Then I also saw the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Society, and I cannot say enough great things about it. Of course, Lily James is amazing, but beyond that.
Where was this at?
On Netflix.
What's the name
so
of
both
it?
Of these are on Netflix. The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Society.
Okay.
It's very weird, and that's actually the first sentence of my review is how weird that name is. But once you know where it comes from, it's sort of humorous and endearing, but it's also scary and sad. But the movie overall is very lighthearted. It does touch on some Nazi occupation themes because it was set during World War II.
What's it about?
So it's about this girl. It's about this girl who receives a letter. She's an author. She receives a letter from this man who wants to know more about an author that she had read a book from. And they end up basically... She wants to learn more about his book club, which is the society that's mentioned in the title. She goes to visit, and then they have some things that come up. So,
yeah, they do.
No, not like that.
Yeah.
It is. It's a historical not rom-com, but romantic piece. But it's very interesting.
Nazi rom-com. That's something you don't hear every day. But it's good. You recommended
it's
that one.
It's wonderful. It's so good.
I saw Dog Days. I didn't review it because it's going to be out of theaters by the time you hear this podcast. It's not doing very well. But I will say it was actually enjoyable. I mean, it's basically a bunch of intersecting stories and all these people are tied to each other through dogs. Nina Dobrev's in it. And then a bunch of people you don't know or care about. But it's an interesting – and what's her name? Vanessa Hudgens, right? She's charming. Charmingly adorable. Yeah.
Finn Wolfhard.
Yeah, Finn Wolfhard, and he's like 27 years old now, apparently. He suddenly grew up. Last thing I saw him in was Stranger Things or It, one of the two. And he was like 10 there, and now he's playing a 16-year-old, and he looks 16. It's weird.
There's another guy in it, too, that's famous.
No,
I can't remember
not
his
really.
Name. Yeah, there is.
I'm telling you, I just saw it. Trust me, there's not. So
he's in the trailer, at least.
It's predictable, it's formulaic, but it's also cute. And if you are an animal lover, I think you really will enjoy it. So it's one of those movies where, you know what, critics are going to hate it. Cynics are going to bitch about it. It's a cute, ridiculous animal lover kind of movie. Go watch it with your significant other. I think you'll enjoy it.
It looks adorable.
Yeah. All right, and I do want to say as we close this out, our hometown of Rockford, Illinois is having a walk to raise money for the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention, and the Hollywood Outsider is sponsoring the event. So if you would like to donate anything towards this very good cause, go to rockfordwalk.org. That's rockfordwalk.org, and anything you donate will, of course, be appreciated. It's for a good cause. Thank you all. Be sure to join our Facebook group. Tweet us on Twitter at Buy Popcorn. Forgot what I was talking about. Remember to grab the hoe and the go there. Android app, Spotify, Apple or Google Podcast, Stitcher, thehollywoodoutsider.com, your podcast app of choice. You can always find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at rjohn.draws, Amanda on Smirk, and me and my other podcast, the former Remake This Movie Right, Beyond Westworld, and The Blacklist Exposed.
You really just had to rub it in, didn't you?
What's that?
The former
I mean, it's not, it's now officially, it's not current anymore, right? I mean, I had a final episode.
It's current today, but not when they listen. The
final episode is new as of this moment, but right. Next week it won't be. It'll exactly. be old.
Sad times. Wonderful times, though.
You know what? We should go to the cemetery and listen to an episode of Remake This Movie Right.
Pet Cemetery.
There you go. Boom.
Pet Cemetery. And we're just going to throw a shoe across and have like a car hit it or something.
What the?
The shoe flies off when it gets hit.
Yeah, that's just so dramatic. Why would we want to cause an accident so we can...
I was going to say, that can cause an accident. Car driving by and a shoe gets... the guy's going to freak out, drive into the cemetery, take everybody out.
Think of the plus side. I mean, they don't have to go far to bury him.
That's true.
I mean, that's got to be cheaper, right? If you just die at the cemetery.
Saves on cost.
I would assume so. They just bury one hole and yeah,
problem solved. Cut you out right there.
Okay, well, thanks,
bury
everybody.
Bury one hole?
Yeah, you bury one hole. Whatever that meant.
He was hoping you'd just see past that.
Make sure to listen to the rest of The Hollywood Outsider. We had an interview with the composer from Blindspotting, Michael Yuzerski, who's really interesting. If you like music, check that out. It's really interesting. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you guys for doing this, as always.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn. Next week, we have Muppets.
Yes!
You know when you say, all right, after we say thank you, it sounds like it's scripted, like you're waiting for us to say thank you to you.
Yeah, I would actually appreciate it if you'd call me King.
No.
I'm recording. Are you recording?
I am recording.
All right. Amanda, are you ready? Oh, okay. Thumbs up on a podcast. It works out great.
Well, anytime I say ready, Freddy, I get yelled at. So I'm just going to give you a thumbs up.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Well, don't judge my thumbs up then.
Maybe just don't have it on a podcast. You know what? Say thumbs up next time.
You can say I skipper, I shipmate. Any of those things will work.
Savvy?
No.
Savvy?
All right. Here we go. Thumbs up. You're recording?
I'm recording.
She said thumbs up. See, there you go. Savvy. All right. I'm going to make that thing. I'm going to make it a thing. I don't want it. All right.
My name is Aaron Peter. Bring it back around again.
God damn it, John. Let's try this one more time. Right now.
We didn't even do anything.
I was trying to. I thought it was coming.
That's what she said.
Oh, Jesus.